Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I got linked one. This is a really good one, and I'm not 100% sure. This one's by Hasufly, Hasufly, on Medium. But it's also, this was posted on his Medium page on May 20th, but it was also posted on coinmetrics.io, and that was, that was the same day. Okay, so this, I assume they're either affiliated or the writer for one or the other, because the coinmetrics.io site just simply lists the Coinmetrics team as the writer. So I don't have like a specific author, but I'm assuming that these are the same guys, and you can find it at both locations. So we're going to go ahead and jump into this article, and it's actually very relevant with something that happened last night. You may have noticed yesterday there was a significant jump in the mempool size and unconfirmed transactions, which I kind of investigated a little bit this morning just because it interests me, and it's very relevant to our article today, so we'll talk about it afterward. But the article, which we will go ahead and jump into, is titled An Analysis of Batching in Bitcoin. Just a heads up, there are a lot of charts in this article, and I don't want to go into attempting to describe all of them, particularly because I think the article does a decent job of summing up what they mean and what we can discern from them. But the charts themselves and the article show a lot of really useful data, and so definitely go check it out so you can kind of get a more visual idea of what's going on after you listen to the article. On May 6th, 2017, Bitcoin hit an all-time high in transactions processed on the network in a single day. It moved 375,000 transactions, which accounted for a nominal output of about $2.5 billion. Average fees on the Bitcoin network had climbed over a dollar for the first time a couple days prior, and they kept climbing. By early June, average fees hit an eye-watering $5.66. This was quite unprecedented. In the three-year period from January 1, 2014 to January 1, 2017, per-transaction fees had never exceeded 31 cents on a weekly average. And the hits kept coming. Before 2017 was over, average fees would top out at $48 on a weekly basis. When the crypto recession set in, transaction count collapsed and fees crept back below $1. During the most feverish days of the Bitcoin run-up, when normal users found themselves with balances that would cost more to send than they were worth, cries for batching, the aggregation of many outputs into a single transaction, grew louder than ever. David Harding had written a blog post on the cost savings of batching at the end of August, and it was reposted to the Bitcoin subreddit on a daily basis. The idea was simple. For entities sending many transactions at once, clustering outputs into a single transaction was more space and cost efficient, because each transaction has a fixed data overhead. David found out that if you combined 10 payments into one transaction, rather than sending them individually, you could save 75% of the block space. Essentially, batching is one way to pack as many transactions as possible into the finite block space available on Bitcoin. When fees started climbing in mid-2017, users began to scrutinize the behavior of heavy users of the Bitcoin blockchain to determine whether they were using block space efficiently. By and large, they were not, and an informal lobbying campaign began in which these major users, principally exchanges, were asked to start batching transactions and be good stewards of the scarce block space at their disposal. Some exchanges had been batching for years, Others relented and implemented it. The question faded from view after Bitcoin's price collapsed in first quarter of 2018 from roughly $19,000 to $6,000, and transaction load, and hence average fee, dropped off. But we remained curious. A common refrain during the collapse in on-chain usage was that transaction count was an obfuscated method of apprehending actual usage. The idea was that transactions could encode an arbitrarily large, within reason, number of payments, and so if batching had become more and more prevalent, those payments were still occurring, just under a regime of fewer transactions. Some sites popped up to report outputs and payments per day, rather than transactions, seemingly bristling at the coverage of a declining transaction count. However, no one conducted an analysis of the changing relationship between transaction count and outputs or payments. We took it upon ourselves to find out. Table of contents. 1. Introduction to batching. 2. A timeline. 3. Analysis. 4. Conclusion. 5. Bonus content. UTXO consolidation. Introduction to batching. Bitcoin uses a UTXO model, which stands for unspent transaction output. In comparison, Ripple and Ethereum use an account balance model. In Bitcoin, a user has no balances, only UTXOs that they control. If they want to transfer money to someone else, their wallet selects one or more UTXOs as inputs that in sum need to add up to the amount that they want to transfer. The desired amount then goes to the recipient, which is called the output, and the difference goes back to the sender, which is called the change output. Each output can carry a virtually unlimited amount of value in the form of satoshis. A satoshi is a unit representing a 100 millionth of a Bitcoin. This is very similar to a physical wallet full of different denominations of bills. If you're buying a snack for $2.50 and only have a $5 bill, you don't hand the cashier half of your $5 bill. You give him the five and receive the change instead. Unknown to some, there's no hard-coded limit to the number of transactions that can fit in a block. Instead, each transaction has a certain size in megabytes and constitutes an economic incentive for miners to include it in their block. Because miners have limited space of roughly 2 megabytes to sell to transactors, larger transactions, in size, not in Bitcoin, will need to pay higher fees to be included. Additionally, each transaction can have a virtually unlimited number of inputs or outputs. The record stands at a transaction with 20,000 inputs and 13,107 outputs. So each transaction has at least one input and at least one output, but often more, as well as some additional boilerplate stuff. Some of that space is taken up by the input, often 60% or more because of the signature that proves they really belong to the sender, while the outputs account for 15 to 30%. In order to keep transactions as small as possible and save fees, Bitcoin users have two major choices. 1. Use as few inputs as possible. In order to minimize inputs, you can periodically send your smaller UTXOs to yourself in times when fees are very low, getting one large UTXO back. That is called UTXO consolidation, or consolidating your inputs. 2. Users who frequently make transactions, especially within the same block, can include an almost unlimited amount of outputs to different people in the same transaction. That is called transaction batching. A typical single output transaction takes up 230 bytes, while a two-output transaction only takes 260 bytes, instead of 460 if you were to send them individually. This is something that many casual commentators overlook when comparing Bitcoin with other payment systems. A Bitcoin transaction can aggregate thousands of individual economic transfers. It's important to recognize this, as it is the source of a great deal of misunderstanding and mistaken analysis. We've never encountered a common definition of a batched transaction. So for the purposes of this study, we define it in the loosest possible sense, a transaction with three or more outputs. Commonly, batching is understood as an activity undertaken primarily by mining pools or exchanges who can trade off immediacy for efficiency. It is rare that a normal Bitcoin user would have cause to batch, and indeed most wallets make it difficult to impossible to construct batched transactions. For everyday purposes, normal Bitcoiners will likely not go to the additional effort of batching transactions. We set the threshold at 3 for simplicity's sake. A normal unbatched transaction will have one transactional output and one change output, but the typical major batched transaction from an exchange will have dozens, if not hundreds, of outputs. For this reason, we're careful to provide data on various different batch sizes so we could determine the prevalence of 3 output transactions and colossal 100 output ones. We find it helpful to think of a Bitcoin transaction as a mail truck full of boxes. Each truck or transaction contains boxes, outputs. Each of those contains some number of letters, satoshis. So when you're looking at transaction count as a measure of the performance and economic throughput of the Bitcoin network, it's a bit like counting mail trucks to discern how many letters are being sent on a given day, even though the number of letters can vary wildly. The truck analogy also makes it clear why many see Bitcoin as a settlement layer in the future. Just as mail trucks aren't dispatched until they're full, some envision the same will ultimately be the case for Bitcoin. A timeline. So what actually happened in the last 6 months? Let's look at some data. Daily transactions on the Bitcoin network rose steadily until about May 2017, when average fees hit about $4. This precipitated the first collapse in usage, then began a series of feedback loops over the next 6 months, in which transaction load grew, fees grew to match, and transactions dropped off. The cycle repeated itself 5 times over the latter half of 2017. The solid red line in the above chart is fees in Bitcoin terms, not US dollars, and the shaded red area is daily transaction count. You can see the cycle of transaction load precipitating higher fees, which in turn causes a reduction in usage. It repeats itself 5 or 6 times before the detente in spring 2018. The most notable period was the December to January fee crisis, but fees were actually fairly typical in BTC terms. The rising BTC price in US dollars, however, meant that USD fees hit extreme figures. In mid-November, when fees hit double digits in US dollar terms, users began a concerted campaign to convince exchanges to be better stewards of block space. Both SegWit and batching were held up as meaningful approaches to maximize the compression of Bitcoin transactions into the finite block space available. Data on when exchanges began batching is sparse, but we collected information where it was available into a chart summarizing when exchanges began batching. We are ignoring SegWit adoption by exchanges in this analysis, as far as batching is concerned. The campaign to get exchanges to batch appears to have persuaded Bitfinex, Binance, and Shapeshift to batch. Coinbase and GDAX have stated their intention to begin batching, although they haven't managed to integrate it yet. As far as we can tell, Gemini hasn't mentioned batching, although we have some mixed evidence that they may have begun recently. If you know about the status of batching on Gemini or other major exchanges, please get in touch. So, some exchanges have been batching all along, and some have never bothered at all. Did the subset of exchanges who flipped the switch materially affect the prevalence of batched transactions? Let's find out. Analysis. How common is batching? We measured the prevalence of batching in 3 different ways: by transaction count, by output value, and by output count. Batching accounts for roughly 12% of all transactions, 40% of all outputs, and 30 to 60% of all raw Bitcoin output value. Not bad. Have batched transactions become more common over time? From the chart in 3.1, we can already see a small but steady uptrend in all three metrics. But we want to dig a little deeper. So we first looked at the relationship of payments, all outputs that actually pay someone, so total outputs minus change outputs, and transactions. The first thing that becomes obvious is that the popular narrative that the drop in transactions was caused by an increase in batching is not the case. Payments dropped by roughly the same proportion as well. Dividing payment count by transaction count gives us some insight into the relationship between the two. In our analysis, we want to zoom into the time frame between November of 2017 and today, and we can see that payments per transactions have actually been rallying from 1.5 payments per transaction in early 2017 to almost 2 today. What are popular batch sizes? In this next part, we will look at batch sizes to see which are most popular. To determine which transactions were batched, we downloaded a dataset of all transactions on the Bitcoin network between November of 2017 and May of 2018 from BlockChair. We picked that period because the fee crisis really got started in mid-November, and with it, the demands for exchanges to batch. So we wanted to capture the effect of exchanges starting to batch. Naturally, a bigger sample would have been more instructive, but we were constrained in our resources, so we began with the 6-month sample. We grouped transactions into batched and unbatched groups, with batched transactions being those with 3 or more outputs. We then divided batched transactions into roughly equal groups on the basis of how much total output in Bitcoin they had accounted for in the 6-month period. We didn't select the batch sizes manually. We picked batch sizes that would split the sample into equal parts on the basis of transaction value. Here's what we ended up with. All of the batch buckets have just about the same fraction of total Bitcoin output over the period, but they account for radically different transaction and output counts over the period. Notice that there were only 183,000, quote, extra large batches with 41 or more outputs in the 6-month period, but between them, there were 23 million outputs and 30 million Bitcoin worth of value transmitted. Note that output value in this context refers to the raw or unadjusted figure. It would have been prohibitively difficult for us to adjust output for change or mixers, so we're using the naive estimate. Let's look at how many transactions various batch sizes accounted for in the same period. Batched transactions steadily increased relative to unbatched ones, although the biggest fraction is the small batch with between 3 and 5 outputs. The story for output counts is a bit more illuminating. Even though batched transactions are a relatively small fraction of overall transaction count, they contain a meaningful number of overall outputs. Let's see how it breaks down. Lastly, let's look at output value. Here we see that batch transactions represent a significant fraction of value transmitted on Bitcoin. As we can see, even though batched transactions make up an average of only 12% of all transactions, they move between 30 to 60% of all Bitcoins. At peak times, even 70%. We think this is quite remarkable. Keep in mind, however, that the total output figure has not been altered to adjust for change output, mixers, or self-churn. That is, it is the raw and unadjusted figure. The total output value is therefore not an ideal approximation of economic volume on the Bitcoin network. Has transaction count become an unreliable measure of Bitcoin's usage because of batching? Yes, we strongly encourage any analysts, investors, journalists, and developers to look past mere transaction count from now on. The default measure of Bitcoin's performance should be payments per day rather than transaction count. This also makes Bitcoin more comparable with other UTXO chains. They generally have significantly variable payments per transaction ratios, so just using payments standardizes that. Stay tuned CoinMetrics will be rolling out tools to facilitate this very soon. More generally, we think that the economic value transmitted on the network is its most fundamental characteristic, but the naive and the adjusted figures deserve to be considered. Adjusting raw output value is still more art than science, and best practices are still being developed. Again, CoinMetrics is actively developing open source tools to make these adjustments available. Conclusion. We started by revisiting the past year in Bitcoin and showed that while the mempool was congested, the community started looking for ways to use the block space more efficiently. Attention quickly fell on batching, the practice of combining multiple outputs into a single transaction, for heavy users. We showed how batching works on a technical level and when different exchanges started implementing the technique. Today, around 12% of all transactions on the Bitcoin network are batched, and these account for about 40% of all outputs and between 30 to 60% of all transactional value. The fact that such a small set of transactions carries so much economic weight makes us hopeful that Bitcoin still has a lot of room to scale on the base layer, especially if usage trends continue. Lastly, it's worth noting that the increase in batching on the Bitcoin network may not be entirely due to deliberate action by exchanges, but rather a function of its recessionary behavior in the last few months. Since batching is generally done by large industrial players like exchanges, mixers, payment processors, and mining pools, and unbatched transactions are generally made by normal users, the batched to unbatched ratio is also a strong proxy for how much average users there are using Bitcoin. Since the collapse in price, it is quite possible that individual usage of Bitcoin decreased, while industrial usage remained strong. This is speculation, but one explanation for what happened. Alternatively, the industrial players appear to be taking their role as stewards of the scarce block space more seriously. This is a significant boon to the network, and a non-trivial development in its history. If a culture of parsimony can be encouraged, Bitcoin will be able to compress more data into its block space, and everyday users will continue to be able to run nodes for the foreseeable future. We view this as a very positive development. Members of the Bitcoin community that lobbied exchanges to add support for SegWit and batching should be proud of themselves. Bonus content, UTXO consolidation. Remember that we said that a second way to systematically save transaction fees in the Bitcoin network was to consolidate your UTXOs when fees were low? Looking at the relationship between input count and output count allows us to spot such consolidation phases quite well. Typically, inputs and outputs move together. When the network is stressed, they decouple. If you look at the above chart carefully, you'll notice that when transactions are elevated and block space is at a premium, outputs outpace inputs. Look at the gaps in May and December of 2017. However, prolonged activity always results in fragmented UTXO sets and wallets full of dust, which need to be consolidated. For this, users often wait until pressure on the network has decreased and fees are lower. Thus, after transactions decrease, inputs become more common than outputs. You can see this clearly in February and March of 2017. Here we've taken the ratio of inputs to outputs, which have been smoothed on a trailing 7-day basis. When the ratio is higher, there are more inputs than outputs on that day, and vice versa. You can clearly see the spam attack in the summer of 2015, in which thousands, possibly millions of outputs were created and then consolidated. When the ratio spikes upwards, that's consolidation. The spike in February of 18, after the 6 months of high fees in December of 2017, was the most pronounced sigh of relief in Bitcoin's history, the largest ever departure from the in-out ratio norm. There were a huge number of UTXOs to be consolidated. It's also interesting to note where inputs and outputs cluster. Here we have histograms of transactions with large numbers of inputs or outputs. Unsurprisingly, round numbers are common, which shows that exchanges don't publish a transaction every, say, 2 minutes, but instead wait for 100 or 200 outputs to queue up and then publish their transaction. Curiously, 200 input transactions were more popular than 100 input transactions in the period. We ran into more curiosities when researching this piece, but we'll leave those for another time. Future work on batching might focus on determining batch transactions as a portion of adjusted economic rather than raw volume, looking at the behavior of specific exchanges with regards to batching, investigating how much space and fees could be saved if major exchanges were batching transactions. Lastly, we encourage everyone to run their transactions through the service at transactionfee.info to assess the efficiency of their transactions and determine whether exchanges are being good stewards of the block space. Update, May 31st, 2018. Anthony LeCalvez has created a series of live updated charts to track batching and batch sizes, which you can find here. And that is a link to p2sh.info, which is a really good resource. It looks like I've been using them since, very recently. I don't remember exactly when it was that I was alerted to this. But it appears to be... There doesn't seem to be an analysis of the mempool. It's just of batch transactions that have been confirmed into the blockchain. But the chart is really good. You can zoom in on very specific time periods, and it's referring to them. It's a 24-hour rolling average, so you're not seeing it like per block. It's just 24-hour periods of data points. So. And it goes all the way back literally to the beginning of Bitcoin. And you'll just notice the gradual trend up, particularly in batched outputs and volume. So it's really interesting to see that graph, and particularly because I think there's going to be a lot of changes. And we have been beginning to see over the last 6 or 7 months the effects of the fee market and the subsequent explosions and or reductions in the number of transactions on chain respond to those fees. I think we'll see a lot of change that this p2sh.info and coinmetrics.io will be very, very enlightening to have. So I would encourage you to keep both of those in references if you like to check that data out pretty regularly. I know I love to... use it as references constantly whenever something, you know, somebody start talking about like a mempool, a huge jump in the mempool, like what happened last night. Those are the first places that I run to. So definitely check those out. And again, this was, I'm reading it off the Medium page of Hasufly. I have no idea if that's how that's pronounced, but it's Hasufly. But again, like I said earlier, it is also on coinmetrics.io. And it just appears that he is part of the Coinmetrics team. So with that, I'll be sure to link to both of those. But I did want to make a couple of notes. It looks like the large spike in the mempool last night, well, it was mostly throughout the day yesterday, started at about 10 or so o'clock in the morning. And it's all very, very, very low-fee transactions because we don't even really have thoroughly full blocks ongoing at this point. Fees have been really low. Volume has not been keeping blocks consistently full. And the entire drop of, I think it peaked the mempool, or at least on blockchain.info, peaked at 55 megabytes, roughly. Though somebody had said that the mempool on their actual node was at 75 megabytes. I mean, if you were here during, like, December and stuff, it got up to, I think I saw it at over 200 megabytes or something at one point. It got real crazy there. I did not actually check my own node's mempool, only because I did not know about the spike in transactions until later. And I don't know if there's, I don't think there's any historical data on the node that lets you check yesterday's mempool. But if there is, actually, and somebody knows about it, please send me a link or, you know, post it on Reddit or something. I'd love to know. It does seem, however, that There's a couple of claims that this is Zappo that was clearing out a backlog of transactions yesterday, and it peaked up until about somewhere around midnight, and then has been clearing for the last 10 hours or so. And so there's a bunch of rumors that this is Zappo, and a lot of people are repeating this, but I still have not seen Zappo or anybody actually confirm this, so I don't know for certain. This is just kind of an assumption at this point that is being widely spread, but there's been many, many times where widely spread information was false, so take that with a grain of salt until, you know, they say something official. But so the p2sh.info actually does not show, it appears that they were not batching these transactions, which is interesting because obviously our article today was about batching. And if they really did have 55 megabytes of transactions, p2sh.info only actually shows during this same period, and yes, it's a 24-hour average, so we won't know the full effects for another 24 hours, but that it only really shows an increase in what is percent batch size 1, which, if I'm not mistaken, is just a single output transaction. So it would, even though fees are low and it wasn't really a concern because these are obviously low time preference, they barely put any fees on them, it's interesting that they did not batch them, even though it's very cheap right now. It still seems like, I mean, I guess they just probably just don't have batching figured out yet, or implemented on their system. But at any other time, that could be, or at a time with higher congestion, that could be a really pain in the butt to have that many transactions essentially backlogged. If they were trying to dump a whole bunch of low time preference transactions, this is definitely the time to do it, and it cleared out relatively quickly. But one thing that I noted and I thought was funny is because a whole bunch of people are just railing about how this is just a terrible thing. It didn't seem to cause any problem at all. It didn't even stop the normal transaction flow from getting from their average confirmation times, which you can see on transactionfees.info, I believe, because they were such low transactions, they were such low fee transactions that they were basically prioritized last, behind pretty much everything else on the network. So confirmation time for the average fee didn't even really change. And Bitcoin is designed to handle exactly this kind of thing. I mean, this is exactly why you have the data limit, the block size or block weight now, is because the Bitcoin network does not experience any issues with validation time or the computation needed to process all of these transactions and keep up with the network. The ability for new nodes to sync is not affected at all, and, you know, no surge in computational requirements or propagation issues. It's just, it's all in the mempool, and the fee is the one metric that's meant to adjust and account for that. And while the fee market and essentially the network for trying to price these things is not, it's not there yet, as if you notice, because that article actually shows those graphs, and you'll notice that there's a delay. There's a delay between the increase in fees and then the drop-off of transactions. And I think that's specifically because the pricing mechanism is not fast yet. There's still a price discovery issue with how fees are calculated. And I think over time, it'll be exactly these kind of episodes that allow us to get a better understanding of what fee is necessary at what time and what batching is needed, and to kind of get everything prepped for the major transaction users, kind of the industrial use cases, and even basic wallets to be better, to be smarter about their batching and how they use their UTXOs. So I think this is kind of a natural process of figuring this mechanism out, and it's so fun to think about. I've kind of analogized the concept of Bitcoin transactions and traffic. It's a very like weather style thing. You know, it's unpredictable, but it's got a lot of balancing act going on. And it's just very interesting to see it because because it's an open network, it's like a weather pattern for trade and stuff around the world. And I don't know, it's fascinating to me to read and study about this stuff, because it is unpredictable and it isn't something that can rightly be controlled. It simply needs to have the incentives to balance it out, and the network will handle it fine. And it did, which is really cool in my opinion. So I don't want to go too much more into this, but be sure to go to coinmetrics.io and or the Medium page with the article in order to check out all the graphs, because there's a lot of really useful, you know, visual data there to kind of get a better image in your head of what happened and what's been going on over the last 6 months. But with that, we'll go ahead and close this one. Again, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and Medium. Hopefully I have some of these articles that I've been playing around with coming out soon, and I'll be reading those on the podcast as well. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave us a review if you like it, and share with all your crypto friends so that they can get all the best Bitcoin and crypto articles read to them as well. If you have any comments or anything, just post in the subreddit, the r/cryptoeconomy subreddit, where I will post this episode. Just so, you know, if you have any suggestions or comments, feel free to jump in there. Until next time, this has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.